Welcome to We Got This Covered's Cinemaholics, the weekly movie review talk show where critics and fans finally unite to discuss the biggest and best films coming to theaters. We're not just fans, we're not just critics, we're cinemaholics.
Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, the official podcast of WeGotThisCovered.com. I am John Agroni from the Internet, California. And from the Internet, Pennsylvania, he is a pop culture writer for Cinema Blend. He's also a freelance writer for The Playlist, Cut Print Film, and so much more. I can't count. It's Will Ashton.
Hey there.
And we have a special guest. The problem is, this special guest, I don't know how to describe him. I don't even remember how... I feel like you're an enigma, Jake Holland.
You know, I wish I had a business card with that specific lead-in. Just
that
all that.
Sentence.
And then just let people just sit there and read it and figure, like, what? Why are we even talking to this guy?
Yeah, I know I should be, but I don't know how to describe who you are. Can you do it? Like, is there any – what's your deal?
You know, I just – I'm one of those – you know, I feel like the ones that I – associate with, hate to go with this route, but you know, I'm just one of those dang content creators. Makes ridiculous videos on the internet and just runs rampant with, I don't know, I'm still clinging to the Vine model, so that's where I feel like I got my reputation. So I love short form video. I make a lot of that nonsense, and then I'll chime in here and there with stuff about movies and geek shenanigans, and I also still play Pokemon Go, so.
That's right. What is the name of your YouTube channel again?
It's just my name.
Jake Holland.
Keep it real, so it's just Jake Holland.
Isn't there something else, though? It's like Pizza Beard Party or something?
Yeah, that was that's my Instagram, is Pizza Beard Party. I think that might even be the backslash on Facebook and maybe even YouTube, but it's easy to find with just my name.
I know you, Jake. You're like a comedy pop culture guy. So for those of you who haven't checked out Jake's videos, they're actually pretty great. The reason I know who you are is I think, I don't remember who it was, but we went to the same like college and someone was like, yeah. Jake Holland, meet John Agroni. And it was like Batman v Superman. It was like Bruce Wayne, Clark Kent. It was like
Martha.
Yeah. That was a weird moment for us. Yeah,
it was.
So this week we are talking about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and it's great to have you here, Jake, because we know you're a huge fan of the Jurassic Park original movie, and I'm curious to hear what you think of the other movies, too. I don't want to make any assumptions, of course.
No, but I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. Before we get into the meat of the review, and of course we have mini reviews coming up later in the show, I believe we're going to be talking about Luke Cage and a couple other little surprises, some movies I don't think people are going to be expecting. We have some off topics for all of you this week. The first thing is we of course have a spinoff podcast, as you know. They're called Anyway, That's All I Got. They're hosted by Sam Nolan. They came out with a new episode this week, and it is the Brad Bird episode, as they're calling it. So the Brad Bird episode, they went through the films of Brad Bird, starting with The Iron Giant, leading all the way through even Tomorrowland, and talking about Incredibles 2. It is a wonderful episode, full of stuff I never even knew about. I know, Will, you're a fan of Brad Bird, and they talk at length about how he has ties to the Simpsons animation. Mm-hmm. And there's some really good deep cuts in that episode.
Yeah, I mean, Brad Bird's one of my favorite filmmakers, so I'll have to check the episode out.
Well, let's put it on your list of A-tags that you haven't seen
for sure.
Yet,
definitely,
but
yeah,
you want to.
That list.
I listened to it, like, straight to back. It was one of their best episodes yet. I say that a lot. It's because their episodes actually do keep getting better and better. So that's the Brad Bird episode, yeah. And it's good. Please check it out if you like Brad Bird at all. If you like Ratatouille and you want to learn more about a great filmmaker, they're doing great work over there. And that is on the A-tag feed right now. We're going to be doing a Jurassic episode, and it's going to be crossing over with Cinemaholics. So you'll be hearing them, I believe, a week and a few days from now. So keep your eyes peeled for that. They're going to be going through the entire Jurassic Park franchise. It's going to be amazing. And speaking of, you know, movies made by Spielberg, we also have a special bonus episode coming this Tuesday. By the time you're listening to this, that won't be far away, I believe. And on Tuesday, we are going to be releasing a podcast trailer. This new show that's coming out on Wondery called Inside Jaws. It's kind of like a documentary, but for podcasts. And it's like a how they made the movie Jaws, of course, the 70s classic from Steven Spielberg. It's from the same people who did Inside Psycho and Inside the Exorcist. It's really cool. They do like stories about how what inspired classic movies, and it's done with like really great production. And this one, I believe, is being done by Mark Ramsey. So that we're doing a special preview episode of that on Tuesday. So you'll be able to get a really good taste of that show. And if you like it, hopefully you'll check out because I believe it'll be releasing either that day or sometime that week. It's going to be pretty great. Do you guys like Jaws? You know, Will Ashton, is it a movie you enjoy to this day?
Yeah, of course. It's a classic. I've been meaning to revisit, and this podcast will give me a good chance to do so because I haven't seen it since I was a kid. But yeah, I mean, if you break that movie down, it's really a miracle that that movie turned out not only well, but as well as it did. So I'm very curious to check out this podcast and see just how crazy this production was, because I know it's pretty insane.
What about you, Jake?
Agreed. It's, you can't not love it. It's a classic. I not entirely revisited it recently. We were at the beach, and it was one of those marathons on TV where they were showing numerous of the Jaws movies back to back. But I love it. I have I don't know how familiar. I'm assuming you guys would be more familiar with them than people I typically talk to. When I bring up like the Mondo, based out of Austin, Texas, pop culture phenoms, they make a ton of awesome just like posters, apparel, pins, all sorts of stuff for movies. They just seem like a rad company. One of the ones I've managed to get, which their posters are typically hard to get, was one of their Jaws posters. So,
oh man, you're teasing us. I want to see what this poster looks like.
I'll have to send you a picture. It's a phenomenal poster.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, yes, we're all fans of Jaws. It's a wonderful movie. I would say it's one of basically the first blockbuster by most people's estimation.
Well, yeah, I mean, it started the summer blockbuster, and it's also, I think, as far as I've heard, one of the few examples of a film being better than the book that inspired it.
I would say the same about Jurassic Park, just saying.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Yeah, I own the book for Jurassic Park, but actually I've never read it, but I've heard it's not quite as good as the movie.
Okay. Well, I haven't read the book either, so...
Oh, okay.
I don't...
I got like three chapters in, and I couldn't...
Yeah. I'm just chiming in on consensus here. So yeah, that's Inside Jaws. That's going to be coming out Tuesday. Also, you know, last week we talked about Incredibles 2, had a whole review, it was a whole thing. It's great. Well, the movie has been doing insanely well. As a lot of people predicted, the box office for Incredibles 2 is insane. Have you guys seen the numbers? It is like doing better than Finding Dory. If you recall that movie in a week, I think it made over like $200 million domestically just in the US, and Incredibles is at like $269 million right now. Did you guys see this coming, that Incredibles 2 is going to be like a phenomenon? Jake, I don't even know what you thought of Incredibles 2.
I loved it. First and foremost, I got to see it on Father's Day, and it felt right. Even though the offspring was not with us, because he can't sit through movies just
yet.
He's
too young, yes.
He can sit through them here at home, but not so much in a theater setting. I wouldn't do that to my fellow filmgoers. I would say no, though. Even though there was a lot of hype from friends and people that I follow, I was a little shocked that it took out Finding Dory.
Same here. Will, I mean, I know we were kind of thinking, you know, Infinity War is still probably going to be the biggest movie of the year. It's like currently over $2 billion or something like that worldwide.
But yeah, I think we both knew it was going to do really big numbers. I didn't think it was going to do this big this early. I thought it was just going to be like a legs thing where it kind of really expanded. But yeah, I mean, I knew it was going to hit in really high. I didn't expect Finding Dory big, but I'm very curious to see how long the legs are going to be, and if it does beat Infinity War, that'll be surprising, but at the same time, maybe not. I don't know. I'm curious to see, because it is a good film.
Yeah.
And it's a sequel a lot of people have been waiting for, so.
I'll be honest. I don't see it last, like, doing better than Finding Dory, ultimately. I think Finding Dory really did have the benefit of a 2016 summer, and it just didn't have nearly as much competition, and it really just rode a wave throughout the whole summer, pun intended. And in this case, Incredibles, I think, I don't know. I mean, Ant-Man and the Wasp. I think Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom coming out this week. It's gonna be interesting. I do see there is a gap for animated like family movies. We're not gonna be getting another one, I think, until Hotel Transylvania. unless you count Uncle Drew, which we'll be talking about later in the show as a coming soon. So
I was just going to say, I mean, I guess also Finding Dory, I guess, is a little more accessible to wide audiences. I guess,
right.
Even though Incredibles is PG, it is a little more mature than Finding Dory. So I guess that might limit it potentially for very younger audiences. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But I haven't really kept up as far as how they're thinking, like how parents are thinking about the film in that regard.
I mean, I'd say Cinemaholics is cleaner than Incredibles 2. What world do we live in? Maybe we need to make some changes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of box office, we should mention that Solo: A Star Wars Story, the box office for that movie continues to be just utterly disappointing, and it's actually causing some supposed changes over at Disney and Lucasfilm. It's looking like, and this has been a whirlwind of news, so this all could change within a matter of days, but it was reported earlier this week that the Star Wars story films, those are like Rogue One and, you know, the things like Obi-Wan spin-off movie and Boba Fett buys a sandwich, the movie, those kind of things are being put on hold. It's looking like after Solo just didn't do really well, it's looking like Lucasfilm is holding on those projects. But then later they were saying, well, hold on. Like, we still have like 9 films in production. And apparently they didn't like that this reporting was happening, but they didn't necessarily deny any of it. And we should say that even though Obi-Wan and there was even like a Yoda movie that they were talking about, even though those movies apparently might not ever happen, there still is a new trilogy that's going to be coming out from Rian Johnson with totally new characters. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, the Game of Thrones characters, the makers of Game of Thrones on HBO, are doing a totally new series as well. And who knows what the future of Star Wars looks like. What do you guys think of this news, Jake Holland? I know you love Star Wars. I mean, you're the person I go to. You know, when I've read your Facebook reviews of Star Wars movies. What do you think of this news? Are you disappointed?
You know, I don't want to say I'm disappointed. I want them to be smart about how they go about all this. And I think it's good that they're taking the current climate into account. Although, I mean, I did really enjoy Solo. I don't want to say I loved it, but I really enjoyed it. I think I had really low expectations. So, I don't know, as far as the other spinoffs, you know, them taking some more consideration into it, I hope that's a smart thing, because I don't know if I'm looking forward to all the ones that are rumored or mentioned, but I mean, at least an Obi-Wan I think would be awesome, you know, as long as Ewan's on board.
Yeah, and that's not the one that James Mangold was supposed to do. He was supposed to do like a Boba Fett movie,
right?
There's still no word on whether or not that's James Mangold is doing anything with these movies. I don't know.
That if they do the Boba Fett, I would almost hope it's almost like a dread approach. Like, don't take the helmet off. Just leave it on.
Oh, that's probably that's probably how I would do it.
I mean, if I was going to do a Boba Fett movie, I'd kind of do that kind of approach, like a mix of Dread and The Man with No Name, just kind of a guy and walking around the desert. But maybe that might be a bit troublesome if you're going to make that the main character. Hmm. But I don't know. I mean, it could be fun. It's going to be a really tough project for James Mangold, I imagine, if he's still going to be doing it. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm curious about it, at least, more so than I think all the other spinoffs that have been proposed.
Well, there's well-documented evidence that I care not at all for these standalone movies. I think that they are just not the right move. I think that Disney and Lucasfilm just want a Marvel sort of thing where they can cash in on these characters who've already been established. I'm not interested in Boba Fett. I'm not interested in Obi-Wan. I'm interested in what Rian Johnson's doing. And David Benioff and maybe any other filmmakers. I'd like to see weirder filmmakers coming on to this series, people that they don't usually hire, right? More diverse filmmakers too, who will do stories I think we've never seen before. So that's just where I stand. I hope this is true and that they're not actually going to make these movies as much as I did. I enjoyed Solo too. I thought it was pretty good, but I think that movie would have been much better with the same budget, different characters.
Valid.
All right. Well, that's Star Wars. Let's continue this this feel of depressingness into a movie that came out last week. Will and I didn't talk about it. We didn't see it. It's called Gotti. And before I let Will take hold of this conversation, I'll just say the story behind this movie and what's going on and what happened this week is utterly fascinating. Will Ashton, catch up our audience on the hit of Gotti.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to break it down from like the beginning, I guess this has been a passion project for John Travolta for, I guess, now like 10 or 15 years. It's been a movie that's been long in the works, and he was really pushing for this to be like his Oscar contender. Because the weird thing about John Travolta's career is he's had a lot of like hills and valleys. Like, he's been on top of his career and kind of swooping down. He's always like going up and down. And I guess now, I mean, he was kind of getting back up again with the People versus O.J. Simpson. But now he's kind of going back to one of his valleys, because this movie, it's rocking solid, last I checked, 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, which
I forget how many reviews there are, but I don't think there's that many.
Yeah, I looked up now. It's 32 reviews. All of them are rotten. Nobody is liking this movie, and even the synopsis on Rotten Tomatoes, which is usually pretty elegant and conclusive, just says forget about it.
One of the few times I'm a big fan of the Rotten Tomatoes editorial team.
Yeah, even Rotten Tomatoes is taking the hit on Gotti. And that leads me to, I guess, the main point of discussion, which is that
that's
Twitter
not the
page,
weird part. That's not, well, yeah, go ahead.
The Twitter page for Gotti is put, they have a basically impossible task, which is to try to get people to see this movie that a lot of people have put money into. There are like 43 producers or something crazy in this movie. MoviePass is behind it in some way or another. I think from like a marketing standpoint, I don't think they put any money into the actual film like they did for American Animals. But a lot of people have money and investment in this film. And the person that put in charge of the Twitter account was like, you just got to sell this movie as best you can. And his approach was saying that audiences love this movie and that critics hate it. They took the hit, they say. So who are you going to trust? In their words, you or a troll on the computer. Now, everyone who saw the movie is a paying audience member. So technically, they didn't have advanced screenings or anything. So anyone is a paying member of the audience. So everyone is technically a critic for this film. And also, I guess what they were accounting for is, I believe, I don't know if it was the IMDb score or the Rotten Tomato audience score, but it was exceptionally high.
It was Rotten Tomatoes, yeah. At one point, it was like, and it was 78% fresh.
Yeah, and someone broke it down. They realized that, like, basically, it's mathematically impossible for
somebody. This was Dan Merle, Screen Junkies, somebody I know personally, and you know, he's been all over this. And he did break it down mathematically. Somebody on Reddit did too. I forget the name of the Redditor was. Was that what you were alluding to as well?
Yeah, they were just saying that like if you just compare it to like any wide release that's come out, like that is like Incredibles 2 or...
Oh yeah, that was Dan Merle.
What's it?
That was Dan Merle who broke that down.
Yeah. If you like break it down, like this movie has like basically the same number of people saying this is like a 5-star film or whatever. But mathematically, not that many people have seen the film. Like, right. It was literally impossible for that many amount of people who have seen the film. So that means there are people who are, I don't know if they're getting paid or what, to go onto there and just fabricate, like, scores.
Well, here's the data. So somebody actually took the time and went through the written reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. And of the first 58 reviewers who had an available profile, 45 of them created their account in June. And out of 45 people, 32 had only reviewed Gotti. They hadn't reviewed anything else. 10 of them had reviewed Gotti and another movie, and 7 of them was American Animals, which is another film owned by MoviePass. And yeah, so Rotten Tomatoes came back at this, and they were like, look, these are all active accounts. And everyone's like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, Rotten Tomatoes is trying to say that the numbers are fine. They have, it's in their interest to be like, you can't just fudge the numbers. But people are rightfully saying, like, you can have an active account. Like, people can just create accounts and they're still active. But that doesn't
mean
they're
taking advantage of it.
Exactly. This doesn't mean that it's not fraudulent. So when we say, like, when Gotti's coming out and they're being like, critics are trying to murder Gotti, they're taking out a hit.
Taking the
on
hit.
Gotti. This is like some of the craziest, like it to me, I think it's I don't see how any other explanation makes any sense except a bunch of interns and MoviePass or maybe those 43 producers of Gotti made a bunch of Rotten Tomatoes profiles and try to boost up that audience. rating. I mean, I just can't imagine any other scenario here.
Yeah, and it's worth noting right now that the score for the audience on Rotten Tomatoes is 59%.
It's even farther. It was like 69 yesterday.
Oh, so I guess people are now going the opposite route and maybe just... even if they haven't seen the film, they're probably going on there and just putting one star or whatever.
Or the marketing campaign is working and people are... it's actually being talked about so much on Twitter that like... when people are like, oh, maybe I should go see this. Is it actually good? And MoviePass said I should be the judge. And like I'm hearing like Dan Merle himself, he tweeted that he went to go see Gotti and like people were like walking out within like the first 10 minutes. And like basically,
really? Yeah.
And the marketing campaign is like hoodwinking people. So it's a pretty bad story all around.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Excuse me. It's a weird thing because I kind of want to see the movie now. Just out of curiosity. And I don't know if it's like some weird like reverse psychology thing where it's like they're tricking me to see a bad movie and it's working because they're doing everything wrong or what. But I mean, like I said, I haven't seen the film. I don't know if I might miss it by the time I ever get around to seeing it because I still need to see like First Reformed and movies I know are going to be a lot better than Gotti.
I still need to see Superfly. I don't have time for Gotti.
But at the same time, I'm just so curious. Like, I'm so wrapped up in this madness. And I kind of want to give the movie a fair shot because who knows? Maybe I love the film. It's entirely possible, you know, but probably not.
I don't think it's very likely. Jake, are you going to check Gotti out? Are you going there after this recording?
If I do, I'm going to go to like the local theater and try to figure out what the very last day that it's going to be in theaters, which I probably wouldn't need to because I could probably go today and it would be an empty theater. But just ragtag group of friends, go see it on. In an empty theater so we can just, you know, rip it the whole time. Otherwise,
I hate watch it.
I guess
I'll probably pass.
I guess that mentality is all press, good press. I mean, if we're talking about the movie, they must be doing something right.
That's right. That's
Even if they're doing everything wrong, they must be doing something right.
There is something to this idea that like it is like you're going to movie pass it. You know, like it's the kind of thing where if you have movie pass, maybe it makes a lot of sense to go see this one basically for free if you've already seen a bunch of movies this month.
I would not see it. I would not even think about seeing it unless I had MoviePass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same.
Oh, boy. Well, we have other priorities, Will Ashton. I still haven't even gotten you to watch the end of the effing world. And
that's
so
true.
If you watch Gotti before that, I will probably scream.
The hit.
I will. All right, that'll do it for our off topic. So it was especially long this week, but a lot of stuff happened this week. So without any further ado,
about that remake of Last Jedi,
I thought about it, and I don't even want to give any more fuel to that nonsense.
Yeah, fair enough.
For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, look it up on Twitter. Yeah. Basically, Jake Holland is remaking The Last Jedi.
It's true.
Yeah.
Full. Oh wow! Congrats, man.
They funded me the $200 million. It's my project.
Can't wait to see it. All right. Well, let's get into our featured review this week. We are talking about Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, the direct sequel of Jurassic World, which came out just 3 years ago. And it is, of course, the fifth movie in the ongoing Jurassic Park cinematic universe, if you want to call it that. This is a new wide release. It's the only wide release this week from Universal. And it was directed by J.A. Bayona. He's an accomplished Spanish director, and this movie's been out for weeks internationally. The reviews have been mixed to positive. I haven't seen a lot of Bayona's films. I watched Monster Calls for the first time this week to sort of get myself ready. Did not care for that movie, honestly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that came out like 2 years ago. I was heavily bored, and I did not like the main character at all, so I had a hard time with it. I love Felicity Jones, and... you know, I was really excited to see this because she's in it, and Liam Neeson, of course, has the voice of an angel. So, yeah, but it didn't do it for me.
That's weird. Actually, I was quite taken by that movie.
I know
that
a lot of people
were.
That
might be one of my favorites by the filmmaker.
Okay. I know a lot of people really liked it, so I'm probably the outlier here. But anyway, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, once again, stars Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard returning as co-stars from the last film. Ian Malcolm himself, Jeff Goldblum, is in this movie for about 10 seconds. And of course, BD Wong returns, Toby Jones, and a whole new cast of characters. Rafe Spall, for some reason. It's an interesting lineup. So, Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, I want to hear from you first, Will Ashton. Give us your basic thoughts on the Jurassic series as a whole, and then what do you think of this new film?
All right, starting with me. I mean, I think it's safe to say that the first movie is untouchable. I think it's basically as close to a masterpiece you can basically get from a blockbuster. It's really just basically no perfect, and I haven't seen it as many times as you, but I know that this movie is really has a special place in a lot of people's hearts, and I can understand that, and it's a great movie, but I haven't really been taken by any of the sequels, truth be told. I think with the exception of I kind of like the third one in like a schlocky sort of way. Like, it's kind of shamelessly cynical in that it just kind of tries to not really touch the first movie and just make like a cheesy blockbuster with dinosaurs. Other than that, I found these movies to have very disappointing results. And I'll say that of the sequels, I think I liked Fallen Kingdom more than the other ones. I mean, I didn't dislike it necessarily, but kind of similar to Jurassic World, I found it to be kind of a mixed bag. I like that the director here is actually having some like horror flourish to it. It's kind of bringing it back to its roots in the sense that it feels more accomplished and a little more content and focused than the last movie did. But I still just think the script is really holding the series back. I just think that they can never really capture that same magic as the first movie because they don't really put the same investment into the human characters, who to me still feel very generic, kind of one note here, and I can never really get fully committed to them. Now, I like some of the set piece here. I thought the volcano scene was a lot of fun. I thought the opening was a lot of fun. But I don't know, there was like a tedium that I felt throughout this movie that ultimately kind of made me wander out of it and not really get invested in too much. And that's not to say it's a terrible movie. I just found myself pretty bored by it by the halfway point, and I don't think it ever really recovered in my enjoyment value.
Interesting. I want to go next because I want to respond to some of that directly. So I'm sorry, Jake Collins.
Okay, fair enough.
Here, Jake was going to go. Well, you know, I don't know. I want to follow that. So I'll start off by saying Jurassic Park, I consider it the best summer blockbuster ever made. I believe that it is like the epitome of summer blockbusters. It's in my top five movies of all time. It was like the theme of my wedding. Like, Jurassic Park is like my thing. I love that movie. And people say that, like, you must really hate the sequels. To which, I don't know why, but I've always gone into the sequels not expecting it to be the first, because I love the first so much that I'm like, that happened, and it'll probably never be topped, and that's all right. I still enjoy the rest of the movies on their own terms. Lost World. I like a lot of aspects about Lost World. I liked what they were going for. I like how dark it is. I like the third one. It does take some interesting risks, but I think the third one is probably the worst out of all of these movies, honestly. I just think it just completely goes so far back. It's just going back to the jungle and like back to the island, and there's just nothing enough new about it except for flying dinosaurs now. As far as Jurassic World goes, I had so much fun with Jurassic World, which probably sounds like a slight if you say you had fun with it, but I do think it's kind of a blast, and like it just changes things up, and I just remember being totally into it. You know, I think that movie is very dumb, and a lot of it doesn't really hold up, and it's not anywhere near the first movie, obviously, but it did feel like a real sequel to me, at least. Like, it actually, you know, brought to life things that I wanted to see on the big screen. Seeing the park actually being run was such a great idea, and I thought it really worked. But obviously, that movie has a lot of problems because it's just, it does suffer from like characters just being so stupid. And characters are also stupid in Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. But I will say I was never bored in Fallen Kingdom. And the thing that I appreciate the most about this movie, and I'm not going to talk about it too much yet, it does feel so different to any other Jurassic Park movie we've seen. In a way where I wasn't even sure how I felt about it after the movie. I was like, that was not what I was expecting. And I kind of really dug it because There was something about Fallen Kingdom. Maybe it's this director. I know Colin Trevorrow, who did Jurassic World, he and Derek Connolly's writing partner, they also wrote Fallen Kingdom. But there was something about the directing in this one where I thought the craft was way more on point. There were actual moments that made me like gasp and like my jaw was open. And I don't know, Fallen Kingdom kind of sucked me in. I don't want to talk about it too much until we get into spoilers, but I dug this one. Definitely not as much as, you know, a lot of other summer movies this year, or even movies in general in 2018. But I definitely enjoy this one, and I hope it does well. Jake Holland, what about you?
You know, I mean, like we've both agreed on, the first one is, it's untouchable. It's up there. It's in my top five. And I think you captured it well to how I feel too. I've never gone into any of these, the sequels or this new trilogy going in, with the same expectations in the least. So even when I have like disappointments, I'm not holding it to the same standard as the first one, because it's just not going to happen. And if it did, I would be floored, but they're just fun. I mean, I think, yeah, there's still key moments in the older movies that I will always go back to. Like, I love in Lost World, the scene of you see the raptor tails up above the tall grass coming after the guys, or the third one where the pterodactyl comes out of the mist, or even the stupid ringtone being inside the Spinosaurus. Just dumb stuff, but it's just fun. And yeah, like you said, Jurassic World was it felt like a true sequel. It captured a lot of stuff that I'd wanted to see, and it was just a good, fun summer movie. But even with all that, I felt like I feel like I wish I'd watched less of the trailers for this one, because there was a lot of stuff that I feel like they'd thrown in that I didn't want to see, that I didn't know would be kind of key moments, or even some of the stuff that was at the ending montage that I saw in some of the trailers. Like, oh, I didn't know that was going to be here to cap off the movie. I wish I hadn't seen that in a trailer.
Yeah, I purposely didn't see any of the trailers except for the very first one, and I think the one right after that. But you're totally right. They give away way too much.
I should have gone that approach with this one. I wasn't expecting it to be just like, here's a bunch that you probably shouldn't be watching. Mm. But no, yeah, I think I've gone back to with anybody asking about this one, is it's just a thrill ride. It feels different enough. I love that they getting off the island was just a huge move in the right direction. It didn't really lose me in the middle. I mean, I can feel you on that, Will. I can understand where it was a bit of a lull, and it can be hard to get back on track for some. But I mean, the whole volcano sequence towards the first half was awesome. It was a edge of my seat. But especially once they get into this house and some of the stuff going on in there, that was, I mean, worth it alone to be seeing it on opening night, just to be right there with the rest of the audience reacting as they should, and as the filmmakers, I'm sure, hoped people would react. Because, yeah, there was definitely some jaw-dropping moments. I love the horror aspects that they brought into it. I felt actually, like, on edge numerous times with this new threat of a dinosaur. But as usual, beyond even just the first one, people are just stupid. I mostly enjoy the main characters, but you can easily point out, like, all right, that guy sucks.
Yeah, it's a live-action cartoon.
Which dinosaur to get that guy?
Yeah.
But again, like, I don't hold it to the same standard as the first one, so I enjoy that. I like being able to pick out, like, all right, that guy, he messed up big time in that move, or he pissed off the wrong person. Which means of getting taken out by which dinosaur is this going to pan out to? But I loved it. I had a blast. I would almost put it even at – I think I'd put it – third if we were ranking these. I think I just had enough fun to warrant some repeat viewings this summer with any chance I get. But yeah, I loved it. Good times.
I'm guessing that even though I would probably rate this movie lower than Jurassic World, which for some people really hate Jurassic World. I was not one of those people. Will?
No. I love Jurassic
World. Yeah, I didn't hate the movie. I found myself very mixed on it. There's things in there I liked a lot, but I found also the movie was very mean-spirited, weirdly.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's like totally that one true. Extended scene where like the receptionist lady was violently murdered for like using a cell phone. That found really off-putting.
They play up this reveal too of this one character in this movie who's like the daughter of someone, and I was hoping so much that it was a receptionist lady because this movie is such a cartoon that I was like, I was so into that idea. They didn't. It doesn't turn out to be that, but no, it was fine.
It's a little different.
Like, you have no idea how sold I would have been if that had happened. But anyway, you were saying, Will.
I don't know. I mean, I just feel like, I'm trying to pull up the tweet because I can never figure out who said it exactly. But there's this constant little like thing that I find myself repeating a lot, which is that the first Jurassic Park movie was about like how we didn't really have to recreate things we love and now there are four sequels. Like, they're kind of contradicting the whole premise of the first movie. And I think that's what really kind of holds me back from appreciating the sequels, because I'm the same as you guys in the sense that, like, I'm not going into these sequels expecting the first movie. I've never expect the movie on that par again. But I just feel like these other movies don't really even set the standards, with the exception of maybe the third one at times. And there are moments, sure, in the other ones where I found myself entertained. But I don't know. I just find myself constantly aware of, like, the cynicism of it and how.
Wouldn't you say, though, Will, that Fallen Kingdom has a different theme than the first one? Because in Fallen Kingdom, they want the dinosaurs to survive. Like, it's almost as if this time around, even though the message of the first film was like, get off this island, these dinosaurs, that we never should have done this. In this one, it's more of like, life is precious, and that, like, even though they're dinosaurs, like, we shouldn't just get rid of them. And like, it's very environment protectionist. So I see a difference there. You can argue that it's not good for it to be about that, though.
No, I guess it goes back to my other thing, is that, like, I feel like this movie actually presents some kind of smart ideas, and the same with Jurassic World. There are, like, some kind of meta ideas about this movie being about, like, the franchise in general, like how they're trying to find new and inventive ways to take the series, and that it's still kind of a hindrance. But I just feel like the script holds them back. Like, there's smart ideas. I just wish someone came in and rewrote them, because the ideas they present are interesting, but they're just done the dumbest way or the most obvious way, with characters just blatantly saying things or just doing the dumbest decisions possible for the sake of a plot. And that takes me out of the movie, because I feel like the characters aren't doing this because they want to, or they have, like, a personal drive like they did in the first movie, but because, like, oh, this is just what happens because we're in the movie and the plot tells us we gotta go here.
I don't know if I fully agree with that. Maybe we can talk about that in spoilers, because I want to hear more what you have to say specifically, because I kind of disagree, but maybe I'm just missing something that you're remembering. Because the way I remember it being basically cohesive. Like, even though the characters, a big complaint I do have is that the characters really don't change throughout this movie. It's just like, Jake, you said, it's a thrill ride. You know, you're just going on, like, a wild ride with these characters, mainly Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard. And, you know, they are just making decisions that I thought they were basically consistent with their inner drives and, like, what they really want. And I get the sense what they want is for these dinosaurs to be free, basically. So we can talk more about it in the spoilers. So I want to hear a fair take on that. But let's talk. One thing I will bring up that I heavily disliked was most of the characters, noticeably Justice Smith, who I was really looking forward to seeing in this movie. He's so great in The Get Down, but the writing for this character, and I'm singling him out because it's just a good example of the writing in general for most of these characters, and to what you're saying, Will, about, like, just obvious dialogue, I think is really epitomized with this guy. Like, you really feel that they want this to be like a quippy Marvel-ish movie, where this character is just like, we are not compatible. And, like, just these jokes that do not land. Jake, did you get this impression?
I did. I was looking forward to this guy too. I feel like he had some hint of a promise in the trailers. But I feel like it didn't live up to what they probably intended. And as you're like, hey, Jake Johnson was great in Jurassic World. He had some funny little moments here, and he kind of captured the audience enough. And, let's see if we can recapture that with this new guy who's fresh and on the rise. And it just, it didn't really work. He felt very, very cookie cutter, very just almost like 90s-ish. Like, this is how nerdy people act.
Like Urkel or something. And, like, he was just not interesting. Like, there was nothing to him.
It wasn't fresh or anything new to bring about, like, somebody who's just uncomfortable in all tense situations or outdoors, or, oh, here's my bug spray. Like, the bug spray. Come on. they could have done a lot more with that guy and made it work.
But Will, you were a big fan of this character, right?
No, I mean, I'm in exact agreement with you guys. And that's kind of going back to what I'm saying before. I just feel like this whole thing just feels so cynical to me. Like, it just feels like they're making a movie because they just need to make another Jurassic Park sequel. And just, I don't know, I guess I want to like these movies. I don't think they're all terrible necessarily. I just find myself constantly just annoyed by them, just because I feel like they have the chance to do better things. They can make these movies kind of cheesy and fun, in the sense that, like, they're trying to avoid not being on par with the first Jurassic Park, just being like a fun thrill ride. And I just find that these movies, the Jurassic World ones, I mean, have been just constantly hindered by just dumb things like this where they're kind of just cliched and cynical and just obviously studio movies. And don't know. And I was also disappointed. I believe the actress's name is Daniela Pineda, or is that how you pronounce her name? She was the other new addition to the cast.
Yeah, so she's the paleo veterinarian?
Yeah, and she was in Mr. Roosevelt, who I thought she was very good in that film. I was disappointed that I felt like her character was very cut down. And I heard that there was like a scene where they were kind of going to establish her as being an LGBT character, and I guess that got cut out. Mm-hmm. It just feels like this movie is very watered down to me. Yeah. I just feel like all these decisions have been made to like make the movie just kind of your cookie cutter standard blockbuster, where there are interesting ideas presented, but they aren't really flourished or explored.
I guess
that's what annoys me.
I will say, at least in Pineda's case, she's an Oakland native, so our theater was like kind of clapping for her, which is kind of funny.
I think she's great. I mean, I was disappointed that she wasn't given more to do.
Yeah, and, you're right.
There's a whole section of the movie where she's gone.
But when she is on screen, I thought she was actually a good example of like a side character who fulfills her role and is interesting to watch. And I didn't think she was necessarily bad. I don't think that's what you're saying.
No, that's why I'm agreeing with you. I think that she is good, so good, in fact, that I wish there was more for her to do.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. As far as the villains go, my goodness, one of the most obvious, like if you thought the villain twist in Incredibles 2 was unforgivable, like I can't wait to talk to somebody about like, Incredibles 2 just really fell apart for me because of how obvious the villain was. I was like, okay, watch Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Like they practically had signs above their heads that said, hope you didn't watch Captain Planet because... my God. But yeah, the villains around this time. What did you guys think of them, Jake? I mean, did the villains work for you at all? I will say the guy who collects the teeth, he was the kind of swarmy, cartoonishly bad villain that I kind of wanted to see. Like as soon as I saw him and I was like, oh man, I bet he's going to die at the 45-minute mark or something like that.
No, yeah, same. I think he worked for me in that same, like, whereas cookie cutter archetype type characters can be cringeworthy or eye rolling, like in the sense of Justice's character. But I feel like as far as villains go, like that guy was fun to watch, knowing full well, like, all right, we're not going to see him beyond this movie, most likely. But
better than D'Onofrio, I will say, from Jurassic World.
True.
He was just annoying.
But I mean, like you said, with the other ones, it's just, or the quote unquote twist, like, yeah, it was just very obvious. Nothing, no reason to not want the worst for that guy. But I mean, they filled their roles. And again, like kind of going back to not holding these to the same standard as the first one. I don't really expect much from the human antagonists as obvious and ridiculous as it was and cartoony as they were, and the arms dealers and all that. You know, they served their purpose and they were fun to see what happened to them.
Yeah. That was it. And you know what? This movie did actually surprise me a couple of times, although I sense a little bit of disagreement from Will Ashen on a couple of the points made. Did you have anything to add to that?
Well, I find it interesting that you single out Vincent D'Onofrio as the annoying character in Jurassic World when he was like the only character I didn't find annoying in that movie.
I thought, honestly, Will, what it came down to me was I thought his want to like militarize raptors, which continues into this movie, but a little bit more believably, actually. Like, I kind of bought it in this movie that people would want to buy dinosaurs, but with him, I just never understood his motivations as well, and I just thought he was just, I just didn't get that character, but that's interesting you liked him. Maybe if I rewatched the movie, I guess I didn't appreciate him more.
Like him, I just didn't find myself annoyed by him.
Gotcha. Okay.
But maybe just because he wanted all the characters to die, and I was like, yeah, I can get behind that.
Nice.
No, I'm being a little harsh on Jurassic World. I don't know. I didn't really mind the villains in this, but I agree with you that like they only needed a mustache to twirl to be more obvious. Like it just felt like they're very kind of standardized villains. Like, I don't know. Like I said, I mean, like, there's kind of an interesting idea here about like selling dinosaurs and stuff like that. I guess that could work. Kind of. I guess it just feels like an idea, though. It doesn't really feel like it's really fleshed out.
Maybe we can talk more about it in spoilers, maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Because it's not something that's like... spoiled by the it is kind of like brought up in the trailers, I guess, but like, yeah, I do want to talk about that further. That said, there's so much I do want to talk about. We're kind of dancing around it. Let's get into our final thoughts and grades here so we can actually talk spoilers and do our spoiler section. Will, go ahead and continue your thought. I mean, wrap things up on your end.
Yeah, I don't really know what else I have to say. I mean, I just feel like this movie has like a quota to meet, and it kind of does, but it doesn't really feel truly investing. And that's not to say it's a bad film. Like, I agree with you. This movie is better directed than the last one. I do think J.A. Boyega, is how you pronounce his last name? Bayona, there. I think he is a great filmmaker. I mean, I've been a fan of his other films, The Impossible and The Orphanage as well. I just feel like he was given a clunky script and he tried to make it work, and I don't think he had enough going where he could make it work. But I mean, it's not a terrible film. If you just want, you know, a kind of like middle of the road blockbuster with dinosaurs in it, you could certainly get worse films. And so I don't know. I just find myself between like a C plus and a B minus, and I'm going to give it a C plus.
All right, Jay Colland.
I mean, I can't veer away from calling it a thrill ride. I had fun. I would have to veer towards giving it a B plus in my book. I just enjoyed it. I loved the riskier approach it took with this one. Even though I ultimately enjoyed Jurassic World more, that one just kind of felt like, all right, let's get a return to form. Here we go, reboot the franchise. This one, I like that it took some risks. Whether or not they entirely worked is you know, that's up to the viewer. But they mostly worked for me. I enjoyed the dabbling in some different genres. But yeah, I'm gonna have to settle for a B plus.
All right, pretty high. That means you loved, well, not loved it. You thought it was pretty good. All right, for me, I really appreciate a lot of the craft here. As Will and Jake kind of alluded to, I do think that there are moments in here, and I think Michael Giacchino's score, for example, the decisions that they make, like in the second and third parts of this film, I thought really sold it for me. I thought that they were bold directions. I thought it felt very different from other Jurassic movies. I think this one did a lot of the things that I've always wanted to see in a Jurassic movie. A, they get the dinosaurs off the island, and B, the movie actually does grapple with what that means. Now, it does it in some clunky ways, and I think that it does have some of the same issues as most of the other Jurassic Park movies after the original, where you just have these really annoying characters you don't care about. In Jurassic World, it was those kids. In this movie, it's some of the side characters and the villains. But, you know, I do think enough of this movie is serviceable. Like, it does what it needs to do. It doesn't really make you think that much, except in some certain parts that were... You are sort of have, I found myself questioning, like, what would I do in these situations? And I think that some people are going to watch this movie and be like, well, I wouldn't do that. These characters are stupid because they did that. And I just don't find myself as easily swayed by this movie's, you know, message in either direction. I do think there is like a gray area here. I think it has an ending that made me feel something similar to the first Jurassic Park, where I was kind of like, you know, I love these dinosaurs, but at what cost does loving dinosaurs, would it bring to the world? So, you know, and for that reason and many others, like I do hold this one up a little bit better. I still knock it for a lot of reasons. It loses me in some certain areas. I think that it leaves us on a cliffhanger that is just terrible, in the sense that I wanted more. I wanted to see the real implications of this movie. And I do knock this movie a little bit for the post-credits tease, which was nothing significant. There is something at the end of the credits. Don't bother. It's like, it made me actually angry, because I was like, I waited the entire credits. But we'll talk about that in a sec, maybe. All that said, you know, I was actually in the same boat as you, well, weirdly enough. I was between a C plus and a B minus, but you know what? I'm at a B minus thinking about it more, and I stand by it. I think that most people will watch this and enjoy it for the most part. You do have to overlook a lot of flaws, but yeah, I mean, if you're going to like this movie, if you did not care for Jurassic World at all, if you outright hated that movie, I definitely wouldn't recommend this one. But if you had fun with it like I did, I think this one's worth a watch. So I give it a B minus. That is I think that's like a B minus B average between the three of us. So yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, I do definitely agree with you. I think your opinion on Jurassic World is going to influence how you feel about this movie. I think if you like that movie a lot, you're probably going to enjoy this movie. If you didn't really care for it, then you're not going to like this movie a lot either. But
That's not to say that they're very similar plot.
No, but I think they have some similar problems. And I think
right, exactly.
What you got out of the film in Jurassic World, whatever you got out of that movie, if that's enough to make you forget some of the problems in this movie, I think you're going to enjoy that movie as well. I think you're just going to enjoy him for similar reasons, and you're probably going to dislike him for similar reasons. So,
well put. Well,
that's what I meant. Yeah.
Well, let's take a few minutes then to talk spoilers, and then we'll call it. The spoiler section starts now. If you don't want to be spoiled on Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, you have been warned. This is it. Just go to the timestamps and you can skip right ahead to mini reviews and all that good stuff. So that said, let's talk spoilers. I dig what this movie's trying to do in that now this really is a Jurassic World. I'm a little annoyed that that line was spoiled by the trailers. That would have been a really great moment. But Will, what did you think of that moment? Are you into this idea of like where this series is headed now?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea. I did find it weird that they set up that big ocean dinosaur at the beginning of the movie, and they didn't really do much with him at the end.
Yeah, that's weird storytelling, for sure.
I mean, I thought that, I mean, for all the problems that Jurassic World had, they were really good about setting up that dinosaur and that at the end, using it really well. The big T-Rex, I mean, and I forget what they called it, though, but this
the
movie,
Megalodon.
Yeah, the Megalodon, there you go.
He's just getting his own movie in August, starring Jason Statham.
Oh boy. Yeah. And I just found it weird, because like that was one of the things that got me really excited at the beginning of the movie. I was like, oh, there's this big dinosaur, what's gonna happen with this guy? And then like nothing really happened, except they hinted that he was gonna eat that surfer. I think that was the same one, right?
I like to think he did.
And I found it weird that like, because they set up the whole idea of like all the dinosaurs are free, but wouldn't that dinosaur already be out? If like he was in the ocean, right? He wasn't trapped in the thing to begin with. So
right.
No matter what happened at the end, that dinosaur was going to be out as far as I can tell. Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So I found that was kind of weird to have that big dinosaur included and not really do anything with it. But as far as the main idea of letting dinosaurs be free into the world, I thought it was a neat idea. I just kind of wish they did more with it, which I guess is just my general feeling on the film in general.
Yeah, I guess what I enjoyed about the second and third act, which all exclusively takes place in one location, the Lockwood Estate, which I have to say, I really dug that decision. Like a monster house kind of thing, where we did get to see dinosaurs kind of running around and like kind of, you know, causing all kinds of chaos inside of this house. We didn't see enough of it, I think. Like, I think that if we had seen them escape a little earlier, that would have been cool. But what about you, Jake?
Yeah, I definitely dug the Lockwood Estate approach. I feel like I was teetering back and forth whether I felt like I got too little of the Indoraptor, but I feel like it was just enough. Like it served enough of a purpose, enough of a threat. We were teased at its existence early on enough, like in that second half. It's not like we saw it. It was sold. And then it was dead within 5 minutes. We got more than that, thankfully.
Sure.
But yeah, I thought that definitely brought in the horror approach. I feel like I saw a little too much in some of the trailers. But that definitely roped me right back in with that whole sequence. And I love the design even of that.
Yeah. The hot rod. Yeah, my two of my favorite moments in this entire movie involve the Indoraptor, and they were so different. The first one, when the Indoraptor is crawling in the rain to the top of the house, and like that score just swells up, and I was so taken by that. And when Blue takes the Indoraptor down through the roof, and like that falling. This movie was beautiful. I mean, I don't just mean beautiful in terms of, obviously they used a lot of like darkness and shadow to hide the CGI, right? Right. And not a lot of the CGI was very good, especially when it was in the daylight. But that's why I think the Lockwood Estate approach was really interesting, because they got around that so easily. And I love the way that Bayona used the light. He and his DP were able to just make these frames that like were stunning to me in ways and that were far more artful than we've seen in like any Jurassic movie since the first. So I really give it a lot of leeway for that. Like if it wasn't for those moments, if it wasn't for those like standout filmmaking moments, this I probably would have been way more down to like a C or something. But I don't know. Do you share that opinion, Will?
I mean, I like the idea of like a haunted house for dinosaurs. I was kind of hoping it'd be like a Cabin in the Woods kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I remembered it's PG-13 summer blockbuster, so I guess they can't really get away with that.
That would have been great though.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of fun. No, I mean, I definitely agree with you. I think we've mentioned already that this movie is definitely a lot more artfully made than the last one. Not to say that I don't really want to dismiss Colin Trevorrow's directing the first movie. It wasn't really bad.
I honestly.
I mean, I think it was more that he was inexperienced. Like, I think there are at least like one or two moments in Jurassic World that are well directed. And the ones like that, the ball scene where like the dinosaurs like kind of running around them, I thought that was well done.
Okay.
In the original Jurassic World, but I don't know. I just feel like this movie is definitely better made. You can tell this is actual like experienced horror filmmaker making this film. And I do think that's what makes this movie better than the last one. But I just, like I said, I just don't think he had enough to do. I think he had cool moments. I thought it was also really cool when like they had like that one shot where like the dinosaur, like we follow it as it's looking out the window of the girl. I thought that was really well done. Like moments like that are really accomplished, especially like inside the like museum part too, where we're kind of following the humans and like the dinosaur circling around them. There's definitely artfully made scenes here. I just don't think they really led to a film that was worthy of them.
Yeah, I totally agree, actually. I want to say that the twist that the girl is a clone, so that was dumb, because you can't just look like, sure, I was surprised. I didn't see that coming, but you can't just like not set something up at all. The only thing they're setting up is that like, who is her mom? But like, if your movie, there's no implication for like human cloning, there's no foreshadowing for it, and then they do nothing with it, that really disappointed me. I was like, if you're going to do that, if you're, first of all, it should have come up in conversation. It should have been something of like, if we clone, it's something about genetic power. Like, what if we unleash it on humans, the implications? And then you reveal that the girl's a clone. That's when the moment like that works. And I don't know if they had something like that and they cut it or what, but then also it has to pay off somehow. If you're not going to have it come up at all later in the film, I was half expecting when the Indoraptor is at her bed for it to recognize her as a clone or something. That would have been stupid and it wouldn't have made any sense, but it would have been something. Like, it would have at least been related to who this character is and why she matters. She doesn't matter. That's not to say that the performance is bad or that like she doesn't work as like a plot device. Like, she's fine. It's just, what was the point? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I found her turnaround was very sudden. Like, she went from being like a normal young girl being like, oh, I'm a clone. All right, we'll kill all humans then. Let's press this button.
You know what? I did actually dig that. I think that was a smart choice by the writers to have her be the one. And I don't consider that good enough to be the payoff, but that does make sense.
Yeah, I guess I get what you're saying. I feel like this movie, though, is like a good outline and a bad script. Like, there's smart ideas here. Like, I think that's could have worked if they'd led up to it, like you're saying. But like, the way it's done is just like, oh, I'm a clone. Okay, press a button, whatever.
Okay, Jake, do you agree with that? I want to hear from you.
Well, as far as that whole plot line being brought in, I felt like it was inevitable at some point. Once I knew that this franchise was going to keep moving, but by thinking it was inevitable, I was also very afraid of where they were going to go with that. Because I don't know if you remember those like early rumors, whether they were true or not, of the human dinosaur hybrids that were possibly going to be used.
Yeah, I remember hearing that. Yeah,
I was real worried about that. So I was okay with the approach. I thought it could have been in a lot smarter. I did kind of guess it coming. I don't remember the moment, but I turned to my wife and was like, I wonder if she's a clone.
How did you do that?
I don't know, honestly. Like, I'm not even trying to claim some sort of like, yes, I'm a,
was it the picture book
scene? Intelligent film goer, and I saw it come. And like, I don't know why, I just like had this little moment where I was like, I bet she's a clone. And then so when it did happen, I was like, oh, all right.
That's a really good guess. Kudos.
So one huge moment that I was really afraid was going to be the fruition of that fear of those early rumors was when they zoomed in on her eye. I was really afraid it was going to have one of those weird, like lizard-like moments where the eye like flickers and it looks like reptilian. I was like, oh, please don't do that. So luckily it was just like her eyes were maybe like the color of the sap. I don't know. They were like kind of golden amber looking. I don't know if that was the point or if it was, I don't know what they were really going for there, but I was very relieved that they did not make her some sort of, and whether they go with that approach later on, who knows, but.
Do you guys buy the idea that Hammond had a business partner this entire time? And he just never was mentioned or like brought up at all throughout these movies.
I kind of like that twist. I don't know if I like the fact that, yeah, he was never mentioned. We never really knew this guy conveniently just exists, but we didn't know until later on for plot purposes. But I do like that that was like a divide as far as their ethos and their mm-hmm. you know, split them apart. It made sense. I mean, that was a valid reason to part ways. But it's weird that we never heard this guy before.
I didn't mind the twist. I mean, I didn't mind that, like, that story idea, but I found it really annoying that they kept showing, like, that, like, walking stick that had the same one that Hammond had.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when they show it breaking when
Well, it's
he
not
dies.
The same one.
I know, but it's, like, yeah. supposed to be the same idea. It's, like, spoon-feeding to the audience, like, oh, this is Hammond's friend. Get it? Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know, it just felt very obvious to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't take too much offense to it. Okay, was there anything else you guys wanted to bring up? I think we've covered it. That was all that I really wanted to bring up. I do actually think that I love the approach to it. It was different. And one of the things that people say that they don't like about these Jurassic Park movies is that it's always the same and that, you know, they're always on an island and it's always like the same beats of like, you know, wow, look at these dinosaurs. Oh no, velociraptors. Or oh no, a T-Rex. And then, oh no, the T-Rex again. This one I actually thought was different. There are different set piece ideas here. The dinosaur auction I thought was a really cool idea and I think it paid off well. And I don't know. I dug it. I wish that there would have been more to it at the end and seeing all the dinosaurs go out into the real world. Way to tease us. But I am excited for what comes next. Anything else from you guys?
We're going to Vegas.
Gambling dinosaurs. Oh, no.
I'm looking forward to domesticated dinosaurs.
That's right. Yeah,
living in houses and worrying about like their taxes. And, yeah. Like,
it's a living.
Like that show Dinosaurs. That's what we're going to get. That's
really all this is. It's really just gradually leading into dinosaurs.
Or it's going to be dino slavery, a.k.a. the Flintstones.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So dark.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to our Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom review. We're going to get to mini reviews in a second. But thank you so much, Jake Holland, for coming on the show and talking to us all things Jurassic.
Hey, thanks for having me. What a great way to jump into this little world of Cinemaholics and just talk dinosaurs.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime, and especially movies that I like that a little bit more than Will. I needed the backup.
Just glad to provide some backup.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Jake.
See ya.
All right. Let's get into our mini reviews. First up, we have Luke Cage Season 2. I just filed my review for this. It is on theyoungfolks.com. Luke Cage is, of course, the Netflix show. It's one of the Marvel shows. I'm not going to go into too much detail. You can now binge the entire second season and the first season on Netflix now. I did check it out. Will, did you ever see Luke Cage?
No, I heard the first half of season one is really, really good. And then I heard some mixed things about the second half of season one.
I think the whole thing is pretty good. I think it's a great series. Season two continues to be good. What I like about this show is that you have this main character. He's played by Mike Coulter and he's bulletproof. Right. And so the whole conceit of his character is that he gets to be a Harlem neighborhood hero who really can't be beaten physically. So going into season two, there are questions about how can they bring him down mentally. It's more of a season about like the battle within. It's really great because it's one of the last performances we'll see, unfortunately, from Reggie Caffey, who sadly passed away.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting he's died. He died.
Yeah, he did. And
I miss him a lot.
It was really tough watching, honestly, this season because he has a recurring role here and he plays Luke Cage's father. And so very, very, very heartbreaking. But obviously the performance he gives here is incredible. The first episode in particular, he does the opening narration and it's actually a great treatise on superhero movies in general. He does this whole thing about, you know, how do we really need heroes? And like, you know, are they more trouble than they're worth? I know Incredibles 2 just got to this, but I really dug it. As usual, this series, it's heart pounding. The music is great. The themes this time around are a little bit different. And I think they're going to be dividing critics a bit. Where the first season, it really dealt with a lot of like straight up issues. It had a lot of like politically charged subject matter. Black Lives Matter, of course, was going on when this was being made. It's still going on, obviously, but even more so, like he wears the hoodie that is reminiscent purposefully of Trayvon Martin, the young man who was shot and killed. And you still have imagery like that in this season, but in this time around, like Luke Cage he's more famous. The neighborhood kind of looks to him as a hero. So we're dealing with like different stuff. We're dealing with like black on black crime, you know, what it means to have like a community of African Americans when you have people from a different, you know, black people from a different country coming in and trying to influence, and it deals with things differently. And I think some critics are going to find that troublesome because, you know, it does shy away from more direct racial issues that people are dealing with right now in black communities. And I don't know 100% how I feel about it, but I do like the way that the show tackles it because there are moments where it reckons with some of the bad aspects of Luke Cage himself, where the way that he treats women, for example, is addressed a bit more in this season, and to a degree where I found it pretty persuasive of like making this character flawed in an interesting and believable way. I'm curious though, I want to read more reviews and I want to see what people are saying about this who have more of a direct tie to this community. But coming away from it, I find the season pretty fresh and pretty original and something that people should definitely see, even if it's something that you don't agree with politically or thematically. And if you have problems with some of the subject matter, it's a great conversation starter. It's an important series. It's one that is so well made. And the action here is actually a huge step up. Actually, I think the action in the first season was pretty good, but there's just a little bit more being done behind the camera this time around. And as usual, I mean, you just have these moments where like music will be blaring and like these action set pieces will be happening. And it's just a blast to watch because Mike Coulter himself is so charming and you love to see him, just kick butt and, you know, have a good time doing it. So that's Luke Cage season 2. Will, I hope you check it out at some point. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad you like it. I definitely want to check it out, especially with Jessica Jones as well. Those are the two Marvel Netflix shows I want to check out as soon as I can. But yeah, I'm glad this season's good.
Yeah. Will, you saw one of my favorite movies of 2018 this past week. Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. I saw Thoroughbreds, finally. It's been a long time coming, and I finally checked it out. Not only because of John's insistence, but I've heard from many people that it's kind of my thing. It would be the kind of movie I'd like, and I did like it. It's I forget the guy's name, Corey.
Corey Finley.
He wrote and directed it. He's a playwright. He's only in his like late 20s, mm-hmm. and this was his first time on set directing a movie. And I mean, I was really impressed with the craftsmanship and the level of performances, or the great performances that he got out of these three great actors, especially Olivia Cooke and the late Anton Yelchin, who I think Olivia Cooke, I mean, easily is one of our best rising actresses. I think she has demonstrated time and time again that she is the real deal. And not only that, but she's so versatile. Mm-hmm. And even like a role like this, where I can't imagine what this movie would have been if this performance didn't work as well as it did. But she really commands the screen. And I guess it's important to know, if you don't know, that her character feels like no emotion. Mm-hmm. But she's not like a terrible person. It's like this weird thing where she like knows that like if she doesn't keep herself in check, she can be like a force of great evil. But she kind of tries to balance it out by using like her lack of empathy or lack of emotion.
Yeah, she compartmentalizes it.
Yeah,
which it's makes really her character all the more interesting. Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, knowing how great her career is going to be, it's kind of tragic to see them right next to Anton Yelchin, who had so much promise and had so much potential, and his life was taken much too short. And I don't want to dismiss, what's her name? The girl from The Witch.
Anya Taylor-Joy. I really believe they are a wonderful pair, and Olivia Cooke is such a wonderful foil to this character, for sure.
Yeah, I find it weird because, like, I thought she was good, but I guess just compared to these two, it just felt like she was given the least to do. And that's not to say she gave a bad performance, but it did feel like she was kind of the one that gets oversought. It's like she's the one that's going to get overlooked.
I definitely disagree with that, but that's...
I feel like critically she has been like overlooked of the three.
I see what you're saying. I think within the movie itself, I think that she is...
Yeah, I think she's good. I mean, I do think that her performance can be overlooked easily, and I can see why it's not praised as often, but it is a very good performance. I think it's that crucial key that you kind of need in between them, because you can't just have a movie with like Anton Yelchin's character and Olivia Cooke. It wouldn't really work as well. But I don't know. I think I liked the movie a lot, but at the same time, something about it kind of left me cold, and I can't quite figure out if it was just because I had too much expectations going in, or if I just kind of knew where it was going already. But I liked the film a lot, but something is keeping me from loving it, and I'm hoping that you can kind of help me figure out what that is.
It might take some time. Obviously, I love this film. I think that it is, it's one of my favorites. I think it's in my top five of the year so far. And for me, what honestly carried it so far was the suspense and the dread and really a lot of the philosophical questions that it presents. I mean, you'd think in a lesser movie, we didn't really talk about the plot, but it's basically about these two young women who decide that, or Olivia Cooke basically decides she's going to help Anya Taylor-Joy's character murder her stepfather. Your stepfather's kind of a monster. And in a lesser movie, the stepfather would be such a monstrous character that you'd feel like the movie's trying to manipulate you into wanting him dead. And this movie doesn't really do that. You know, it obviously doesn't present him as a very sympathetic character, but it does. The central question at it is what I find so fascinating of like, how could this happen? How could you get to a point where two teenagers would do this? And I find it such a great thematic question, and we just don't see movies that tackle this. It's why it gets compared so much to Heathers, because Heathers uh-huh. has a lot of those same questions, but it does it in kind of a kooky, you know, teenage. It's a little bit lighter, but also it's obviously a black comedy. And this one, I think it's a really great evolution of Heathers, because the comparison I've seen it made to is Heathers meets Psycho, and I think that's perfect because Psycho is such a masterclass in suspense and dread, and I think this movie marries those two ideas and creates something new out of it. So that's why I find the film kind of brilliant, and I've only seen it once. I want to see it again, so I'm not going to say that it's definitively, you know, a masterpiece or anything like that. But it is a movie that I want to revisit as soon as possible because it made me think a lot of ways that I didn't expect.
And that's interesting. I mean, I don't disagree with anything you said, but I didn't really find it that intense. I found it kind of more like intriguing, I guess would be the word I would use to describe it. I don't know. I guess it's kind of weird because I guess going back to like our Hereditary discussion, it's kind of like our feelings are a little like mirrored, I guess, or a little bit opposite, where like I like that suspense and dread that I felt throughout Hereditary, you didn't feel. And I guess that suspense and dread that you felt throughout Thoroughbreds, I didn't feel.
That's so fascinating. Weird. Yeah. Because it's just completely opposite. Who can account for it? I think that it really comes down to your sensibilities, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I mean, I think this movie is super well done and it's a hell of a directorial debut, and I can't wait to see what this filmmaker does next. I gave it a B+. I did really enjoy it. I will say it's not quite the dark comedy that the trailers are suggesting it is. It's more like you said, like a thriller with like dark comedy elements, which is fine. It's not a slight. I just want to make sure if anyone wants to check it out and they see the trailer, they know what it is. But it's a good film. It's definitely a good film. I don't know if I'm quite on the same high level as you are, but I would be interested to see it again, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the filmmaker does next. So definitely a good film.
You can hear my full thoughts, and I think we did that episode, or we brought it up in mini reviews around March, I want to say.
Something like that, yeah.
And I love the film. I gave it an A. It's one of my top of the year. But awesome. Glad you enjoyed it, though, and you got a kick out of it. I think that more people should go see it.
Well, yeah, definitely. You know, people to check it out.
We have one last mini review. We're super short on time, but I really wanted to talk about Set It Up. This is a romantic comedy that came out on Netflix. And look, Netflix movie, romantic comedy. I can hear your eye rolls right now, those of you who are listening. But my goodness, this is actually an extremely charming, wonderful little movie. Don't go in with high expectations, but let me just give you the rundown. And, you know, this isn't even a movie that I'm like, Will, you gotta see it. But it is something that, like, look, I watched this thing while I was cooking breakfast on a Sunday, and I was so taken by it because it's just such a little charming, little stupid movie. It was directed by Claire Scanlon, so it was a great choice for films directed by women. And it was also written by Katie Silberman. So, you know, writer, director team. And you really do feel, look, you might be being like, if you are that person who are like, who cares? He directed it. It just matters how good the directing is. But, you know, let's be honest. If you have a female writer and a female director, you're going to have a movie that has a better chance of treating female characters in a way that feels authentic, honestly. That's not to say that, you know, men directors can't do the same thing, but, you know, just saying, I think that you do get that in this movie where the female characters are just wonderfully realized. This movie stars Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell, Taye Diggs, and Lucy Liu. And I was so happy to see Lucy Liu in this because,
she's been absent for a little while.
She has. But
she's back.
This is probably my favorite. I can't think of a lot of movies she's been in since like Kill Bill, I guess. But there's a bunch I'm just forgetting. Yeah. And Zoe Deutsch, she was in another movie called Flower earlier this year the movie that I dug was Everybody Wants Some, which she was in, the Richard Linklater film that came out like a couple years ago. I haven't seen Flower, but
You're a big fan of Dirty Grandpa and Why Him? And
no, unfortunately, I didn't get around to it. Well, I did see Dirty Grandpa, and that movie is just terrible.
That was pretty bad, yeah.
But this is a great...
But she was good in it. She was good in it.
Oh, she's great in everything I've seen her in. But Zoe Deutsch is in this, and she's such a great lead actress. I mean, she carries this movie on her charm. Glenn Powell is in this, too. You might remember him. He played John Glenn in Hidden Figures. He's been in a couple other things. I think
he was in
Everybody Wants Some as well. He wasn't the main guy though. That was that was Blake Jenner. But I think Hidden Figures is probably his best, most recognizable role. He's had smaller things like Dark Knight Rises, you know. But anyway, set it up. It is a charming little romantic comedy about these two assistants who work for just really overbearing tycoons, basically. One of them is played by Taye Diggs. He's a investor who's like, he helped found Shark Tank. And Lucy Liu, who is like this ESPN, well-known reporter. And Zoe Deutsch and Glenn Powell's characters, they try to set up their bosses so they can have more free time because their worlds are just insane. It's a fun story. It's not totally predictable and it's not boring. So go check it out. It's just a fun, it's a great date movie. If you just want to watch something with your significant other on Netflix, it's readily available and I 100% recommend it. It's not like a Netflix movie, I should say. I hope I didn't give that impression. It was distributed by Netflix, but it was produced by Treehouse Pictures and it's great. It's a short movie to the point. And it has a scene involving pizza that totally understands what we love about pizza.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I saw the trailer for this, I think, a week or so ago. And it's one of the few times. It was like before a video I was going to watch. And I would say 98% of the time, I just click skip. This is one of those times, like, I was watching a trailer and I was, like, actually getting into it. I was like, I'll check out this movie whenever it comes out. And I've been meaning to check it out. So I'm glad it's actually good.
I would see End of the Effing World first, though. That would probably.
All right. I agree.
I always bring that up for good reason. All right. That'll do it for our mini reviews. We didn't have a lot this week, but we do have some movies we want to talk about that are coming soon to theaters. First up, we have Sicario, Day of the Soldado. This is a new wide release from Sony. It stars Josh Brolin and Benicio Del Toro. Emily Blunt is absent. The script, once again, is by Taylor Sheridan. But this time, instead of being directed by Denis Villeneuve, those of you who saw the first Sicario a few years ago, Villeneuve, who did, of course, Blade Runner 2049, Arrival, some of the best films in the last few years. This one is directed by an Italian filmmaker named Stefano Sollima. He made a few things that I've never heard of. Have you, Will?
It doesn't look like it. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with his resume.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if this is a studio-directed kind of movie from Sony. I'm not sure. But I'm hearing good buzz from it so far. Mike Ryan from Uproxx, I think in particular, really, really dug this. But I know some people who really didn't care for the first Sicario. I know Cinemaholic's friend Kristen Lopez is 100% not on board for this movie for reasons I think are pretty convincing. So I'm very curious to see this. I'm not sure if I'm going to like it. We're going to talk about it next week as our featured review. But are you looking forward to this one, Will?
Kinda. I mean, I like the first Sicario, and I find it weird they're making a sequel without Emily Blunt, but I don't know. I mean, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. I've heard mixed things, like you said. I mean, getting Taylor Sheridan back is a good start, but I don't know if it's going to be really worth my while. We'll see.
For sure. You know, I definitely am of the mind that Sheridan is one of our best screenwriters at the moment. I really love what he's done with like Wind River last year. Was such a, you know, he directed that movie. Especially Hell or High Water. I think that's his best movie that he's directed. Not that he's directed a ton, but
he didn't direct Hell or High Water, right?
Oh, sorry. He did write that one, didn't he? But yeah. I just, I consider him just such a great storyteller that I hope that comes across in this movie. The thing I don't like about it is the name. The name is just weird. Day of the Soldier. Like, it's just kind of, it's literally, if you translate it, it's Hitman Day of the Soldier. Like, what? Come on.
Like, not quite as bad as Manos Hands of Fate, I guess, but.
Yeah, or like the toilet that eats people or whatever that one is. Or the bed.
Death bed, the bed that eats?
The bed that eats, yeah. Yeah, I think this movie, if they were bold, they should have just called it Soldado and not worried about the Sicario stuff. But, you know, obviously.
Wasn't it called Soldado at one point and then they put Sicario in the title?
Maybe. I think it was just called Sicario Soldado at one point. Or maybe, Sicario 2 Soldado. And then
something like that, yeah.
I don't know for sure why they did anything that they did. But anyway, that's coming out next week. We'll talk about it. The only other wide release coming out is Uncle Drew. Is this one on your radar, Will?
Kinda. I have a screening for it, which surprised me, next week. This is a film that's based on a commercial. I believe it was a Pepsi commercial from back in the day.
That's right. It was a digital episodic series made by Pepsi.
Yeah, that's right. It was a Carly Early thing. Like, he, like, the gist of it was, I saw the first one, I haven't seen the other ones, but like, he puts on this like old man makeup and he's like going around like looking frail, and he goes up like, I want to play baseball, and then basketball. He's obviously basketball. I saw the filmmaker behind this movie is the guy that did Mr. 3000, so I was thinking baseball. He's like, I want to play basketball, and then like, oh, whatever, old man. And he's obviously like Kylie Irvy, so he schools these kids, and then everyone goes crazy. And then, is that like the gist of the other ones too? Or
yeah, I mean, this thing ran for like 5 years, but it was the same deal of like, he becomes this character.
Yeah
and they made a movie out of it.
Yeah, and it's in the vein of Space Jam, I guess, where they got a popular commercial with a prominent basketball player, and they're gonna make a whole movie out of it. Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal, Reggie Miller, Lil Ray Howery, who was a guy from Get Out, right?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Is he the main guy? Like, in the guy who's trying to... Well, I think there's a character who's, like, trying to... he's the one who, like, recruits Kyrie Irving and this, like, team to help him get, like, credit or something, like street cred or something.
Yeah.
Tiffany Haddish is in this?
Yeah, Tiffany Haddish and Nick Kroll are in it as well. I don't know how big the roles are, but they are in the film.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's gonna work. Like I alluded to before, Charles Stone III is the filmmaker. He made Drumline, Mr. 3000, and a couple other films and shows.
He made that movie, like, Stepsisters, that I think I reviewed on this show last year.
Oh, the Netflix movie.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Oh, was it? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, it wasn't like amazing. I think I gave it like a B.
Yeah, you were talking about that with Kimber back in our Phantom Thread episode. I remember now.
Yes, it wasn't even last year. It was like earlier this year.
I forgot. Yeah, that was earlier this year. So yeah, two movies this year. I don't really know what to expect with this movie. I've heard mixed things so far, but the reviews seem to be better than I anticipated. So I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I hope it's good. I mean, we've had a pretty decent year for comedy so far, but I don't know how this one's going to fare. But I'll give it a shot and hope it's good. Hope it's Space Jam.
I'm glad we're seeing a sports comedy. We don't get them like we used to, so I'm into
it. Yeah, well, there was that period of time for like 10 years where Will Ferrell made like a sports comedy like every 2 years.
It was every summer, you know?
Yeah, that was true.
Talladega
yeah.
Nights and Semi-Pro and whatever.
Blades of Glory and what was that one? What was the basketball one?
Semi-Pro.
Yes.
I think the only sports comedy we've gotten this year is I, Tonya.
Yeah.
An action point, year, right? If you consider that sports, I guess you can't.
Yeah, that wasn't really sports. That was more summer kind of comedy. But
all right, well, that's Uncle Drew. It's coming out next week, wide release. You may want to check it out. And then we have a couple of indies coming out. We have Leave No Trace. This is a limited release from Bleecker Street. It's from Deborah Granick, who directed Winter's Bone. Wonderful movie. And we've been waiting to see what she's going to do next. She's probably most infamous for launching Jennifer Lawrence's film career. At that point, I think she was only known for being on the Jeff Foxworthy show. But it was after Winter's Bone that Jennifer Lawrence really started to break out as an actress. And this movie, Leave No Trace, it premiered at Sundance, and I saw it at the SF Film Fest. I really dug it. It's a good movie. I think I gave it a B plus. And Ben Foster stars, but the real powerhouse in this is Thomasin Harcourt McKenzie. She is wonderful. Like, she is just such a, like, she's the kind of person that you can only get in a movie directed by Deborah Granik. Like, she just has this talent, this director, of getting amazing performances out of young female actresses. So I highly recommend this one if you liked Captain Fantastic. It's kind of like a gritty reboot of that movie, this idea of like people living out in the wilderness, trying to live on their own terms without any sort of interference. It's a movie about PTSD. It's a movie about trying to grow up in a world and like maintain your connection to family, but also like the greater world out there and trying to make, you know, trying to make your own way, honestly, in more ways than one. So it's a pretty great little film. I would definitely recommend it, especially if you love seeing Oregon and Washington nature. It's definitely that kind of movie. And so yeah, I recommend. And then other than that, we have Three Identical Strangers, which is a documentary that I've heard is incredible. It's the movie that I think people are saying could be the one that really competes with Won't You Be My Neighbor for Best Documentary of the Year. It's from Neon and CNN Films. I won't talk too much about it. I don't know much about it. I've avoided any marketing for it, but it was directed by Tim Wardle. I've never seen his documentaries before. Have you, Will?
I don't believe so, no.
One Killer Punch and Lifers. But this one, it won the special jury prize at Sundance, and it the synopsis is this: one day in the 80s, three random strangers accidentally discover they are identical triplets separated at birth. They then get famous, but it's what they discover after all that that will leave your jaw on the floor. That's a direct quote. Alex Billington called it a must-watch. I want to see this really badly. I hope that it comes out in this area.
Yeah, I actually am not very familiar with this movie, but it sounds intriguing from that synopsis. So
yeah, I haven't watched any trailers because I want to be surprised. But I heard the surprise and the twist here are pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But okay, Will, we have one last movie, Woman Walks Ahead. Tell us about this one.
Yeah, this is one of those movies I actually kind of forgot was coming out. But I remember all I've seen so far is a still of Jessica Chastain on a horse. Yeah,
same here. And she's like talking to Sitting Bull.
Yeah. But the synopsis is that it's a remarkable true story of Catherine Weldon, who is a portrait painter from Brooklyn in the 1890s, who travels to Dakota Territory to paint a portrait of Sitting Bull and becomes embroiled in a Lakota people's struggle over the rights of their land, which could be fun, or maybe not fun.
But could be, I was going to say.
Be a good dramatic territory. Apologize for the wrong use of word there. But
well, fun in the sense that Sam Rockwell is in it.
Yeah, it's true. Sam Rockwell's in it.
This is an A24 film. Bill Camp is in it.
Sherian Hines. Is his follow-up to Justice League?
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. I feel bad. He is a tremendous actor, Sherian Hines.
He really is. I mean, he's so many great films under his belt.
Yeah. Shekel Spencer? Is that how you pronounce her first name?
I don't know how to pronounce it. Yeah, it's spelled C-H-A-S-K-E Spencer.
Cool. And yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know too much about it. It's a limited release from A24, which gives me, in addition to having such a great cast and a good premise, I mean, it's a film that I don't know too much about, but I would be curious to check it out as soon as I can.
And yet another great entry to films directed by women. One was directed by Susanna White, who did Nanny McPhee Returns and Our Kind of Traitor. So definitely a filmography to brag about.
Yeah, different. Different kind of filmography or different kind of rise, I guess, from those three films.
Well, I haven't heard anything about this, but it did premiere at Toronto, the TIFF.
Oh, it did?
It did, yeah. But I don't remember reading any reviews about it. I think it was overshadowed a bit by Shape of Water.
That's true, yeah. I guess that was around the same time. So, like I said, I haven't heard too much about it, but I heard like the general gist, and I've seen that picture, and looks like a film I'd like to see, so... Hope it's good.
Same here. Yeah, I want to check it out. But okay, that's it for what's coming soon to theaters. Thanks as always for listening to Cinemaholics. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and Stitcher if you like our show. You can hang out with us anytime, of course, on the Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find those links in the show notes. And if you want to email us anything personal, anything, you know, professional, hopefully, email us anytime, cinemaholicspodcast@gmail.com. You just might hear your email on next week's show. Thanks as always for listening. That'll do it for us this week. Thanks again to Jake Holland for joining us. You can find more about him on Twitter. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But that's it for us. We are out of time. From the Internet, California, I am John Agroni.
And for the Internet, Pennsylvania, I'm Will Ashton.
We'll see you next time.